The Tom Woods Show, episode 1833.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Delighted to be joined once again by Karen Ann Harlos, who is Secretary of the Libertarian Party. And we're going to be talking about, well, what's going on in the Libertarian Party, what might be going better with the Libertarian Party, all kinds of fun topics like that. Karen Ann, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much, Tom. It is a thrill. It really is.
Well, it's been rather a while, and an awful lot has taken place since then. But first, for folks who are not familiar with you, tell us, first of all, about your history with the Libertarian Party, how you got involved, and I've already told them your current role, but something about that.
Okay, like, I have a somewhat unusual story. I was never converted, as it were, by any libertarians. I just, for various reasons, due to Facebook arguments, which I know never happened, shocking, I had went and read the Libertarian Party platform just to find out what that word even meant, got most of the way through it, was convinced, and within 15 minutes changed my voter registration, and that was kind of the end of the story.
All right, look, obviously the world needs more Karen Ann Harloses because, man, I wish it was that easy.
Yeah, my husband comes home over lunch break, and I'm like, hey, I just switched my political party. And he's like, why? You don't even vote. Like, I was completely non-political.
I love it.
Yeah. And now, oh my word.
He had no idea what you were about to get yourself into.
None at all. We had just gotten married and I was this nice, quiet, non-political person. And if you had told me a year before that I would be the national secretary of a political party, I would have laughed and probably asked you what you were smoking.
Well, you've held that role since 2016, so you've been elected to it twice. Did you have any formal role in the party before that?
Actually, I was regional representative from 2016 to 2018. Then that's when I was on your show, I believe, the first time. And then 2018, I was elected national secretary and was reelected
in
2020. Yes.
That's what it is. Okay, I knew it was two elections. I just had the math wrong.
Yeah, I'm on my third term on the LNC right now, but my second term as national secretary. And I was involved with the Libertarian Party of Colorado for a couple years prior to that. I became a libertarian actually on the same day that Ann Coulter said she would drown any libertarians that voted libertarian. That was September 17th, 2014. And yeah, that's my libertarian birthday.
Oh my gosh. Well, she's always colorful.
All yeah, right. I'm still alive. I remain undrowned.
So we hear. All right. I guess I want to, at this point, we could do the old libertarian conversion story thing, but in your case, it is so unusual that I'd rather just talk about current events and
certainly, and
the party. Now, honest to goodness, I hope people will know that I'm being sincere here. I genuinely do not, believe it or not, I do not relish drama. I don't. I finish things that other people start, but I don't go looking for trouble. Honestly, I have 5 episodes a week to put out. I have 2 email newsletters. I'm busy. I don't wake up and say, is there somebody I can tick off unnecessarily? That's just not who I am. But still, I'm curious. I follow what's going on in the party. I follow the fault lines, and I follow times when people are able to work together. And by the way, I happen to think that the election of you as secretary is a good example of people who mostly do agree with each other. Let's be honest, we all do mostly agree with each other, coming together for a good common purpose, namely the election of Karen Ann Harlos. Can you talk to us about the caucuses in the party? And you don't have to take sides on them, and I don't know that you'd be expected to, but what is the purpose of the caucuses, and what are the major ones right now, and what are the inner dynamics in terms of how they think about each other?
Yes, certainly.
That ought to keep you busy.
Yeah, and at the time I was on your show before, I actually was a very vocal advocate for the Radical Caucus. When I became an officer in the party, I decided that I just don't think it's appropriate for officers to be members of any caucuses, so I resigned my membership at that time, and that was the reason I had resigned. So there is primarily right now, and I know somebody's going to get mad if I forget them, but the major caucuses, there's more minor ones, but the major ones are the Radical Caucus, the Mises Caucus, and the Pragmatist Caucus. And they have some overlap and some some distinct areas of difference. I think the two that are the most similar would be the Radical Caucus and the Mises Caucus. The Pragmatist Caucus, actually, I think they're a bit more diverse than the other two because there are some pragmatists in that caucus that I would agree with 100%. I mean, there are anarchists in that caucus, and then there are some that I wouldn't agree with at all. So it's really quite diverse there. And I hold the opinion that the only way to be truly pragmatic is to be radical. So yeah, but they're more focused on getting, I'm not a member. So I really, it's hard for me to represent a group that I've never been a member of. And I want to be accurate, but I know they mostly focus on what it takes to get people elected. The Radical Caucus, I think, focuses more internally on keeping us on the ideological straight path. And I would say the Mises Caucus does a mixture of both, where the radicals are more in reach, the Mises Caucus is more outreach. And that's kind of how I see it.
Right. With regard to the pragmatists, my view on all this, because they're thinking about, as you say, what does it take to have electoral success? And that, to me, is a strategic question. And strategic questions, I think, are ones where we can have legitimate differences of opinion, where there's no ground for one person saying the other person's not a real libertarian. These are just strategic questions. If we're dealing with the philosophy, well, yeah, there are some, if you favored aggressive war, we'd have to exclude you as a libertarian. But if you're just saying, well, look, the message has to be palatable to the public, so the best approach is such and such, I can at least, even if I don't agree with that, I get where you're coming from. It doesn't mean that you're going to be thrown out or anything like that. I can accept it. And I say that, by the way, I'm being super charitable. I don't think these folks are the biggest fans of old Woods here, but I want to be the better guy here. Is there something you can tell me about the Audacious Caucus? As I'm slightly familiar with them, I think they also may not be my number one fans, but I like their name. I want to like them. What are they about?
You know, I haven't followed them in a long time. They were a split off from the Radical Caucus. And I'm not so sure how active really they are right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't heard much from them. I really, at the 2020 convention, both virtual and the online one, they had no presence that I could see.
Okay. All right. So maybe.
I apologize to any of them if I'm incorrect, but I really don't think they're particularly active right now. Their goal was to make sure that we didn't fall to respectability politics. So sometimes they tried to be the embarrassing members on purpose.
There is
a function to that. There is a purpose and a function to that.
Well, yeah, if there is a risk always that the desire for respectability will turn us into a bunch of stuffed shirts. So maybe from time to time is nice to be jolted back into radicalism, one form or another. By the way, I like your policy of resigning from a caucus when you become a national figure in the party. I think that is the right way to go. And that was I don't think Alex Merced ever was a formal member of a caucus, but he kept that position while he was vice chair. And I think he was, partly because of his natural amiable temperament, that helped to account for how he was able to be popular, I think, with virtually everybody. I mean, it's very hard to find somebody who didn't like Alex Merced. There'd have to be something wrong with you. I mean, he went out of his way to try to hear everybody as charitably as possible and to send the message that even though I have sympathies for a certain wing of the party, but it's my job to represent everybody. And I think that's a good position for you to take.
Yeah, that's what I try to. And I try to join each of the caucus groups if I can, and if it can be done peacefully, you know, not there to cause any issues. But I really do think that the national leaders, at least the officers, should not be caucus members. It brings an element in that's not good for the caucus either, because then it makes some of the debates about the caucus rather than about the really real issue at hand. You become a lightning rod, and it's not productive for anybody.
Right, agreed. Now, I've had Dan Fishman on the show a couple of times, and then shortly after the convention, I was able to talk to Joe Bishop Henchman here on the show. We had a perfectly pleasant conversation. I have a sense, so in other words, I'm not just a bomb thrower or anything like that. I'm perfectly happy to talk to anybody who will treat me respectfully. But I think you've been frustrated with some of the messaging coming out of the LP, maybe through social media and through official statements, either ones that are made or ones that conspicuously go unmade. And what are you frustrated about these days?
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. And that's the understatement of the year, I think. And in some ways, I'm a bit of a black sheep on the LNC for that. I'm probably going to catch a lot of hell for coming on the program. But one thing I do not believe in is I don't believe in the circle the wagons, protect the group at all costs. If there is criticism to be had, I think it needs to be had. And it's for the better of the party. I never say anything to harm the party. I only say things to better it. And that also includes really looking honestly where we're failing. And in my opinion, and I had some very strong words for the LNC on this, in my opinion, we have utterly, completely, and abhorrently failed when it comes to any kind of messaging, direction, or leadership on the issues surrounding the violation of civil liberties around the pandemic. We have been present only in our silence. And I say utterly silent. I'm obviously exaggerating. We've said one or two things. We've been functionally utterly silent. As you know, I'm very involved with the party history. I'm kind of like the unofficial historian. And we raised a bigger stink about them banning teenagers from tanning beds back in the day than we are about this massive civil liberties violations. We put out more press releases, I think, and more effective ones about the low flow toilets than we are about people losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods, being confined to their homes. It is absolutely outrageous that we are not shrieking from the top of the housetops every single day about this. If not the Libertarian Party, then who? And I actually said to the LNC at a meeting, if we can't do this, we should disband because there is no purpose for our existence if we can't speak on this. And yeah, I haven't been the most popular person for pointing this out, but it remains true to this day. And also, I mean, I'll give you another example. We were declared to be on potential domestic terrorists. You would think the National Party would have had something to say about that. And there's nothing. So yes, it frustrates me. I respect the living daylights out of my fellow LNC members. But on this one issue, collectively, we're failing and we should all be held accountable for it. And I'm utterly embarrassed about that. This is where we should be shining. And it's not that difficult to do. And I think we have forgotten that we really have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And we've become timid in a way that this party never was in the past. It's the people that have nothing to lose that change the world. I mean, you and I are both people of faith. So I like to use sometimes Christian analogies. I used to apologize for that. I don't anymore. You had a handful of disciples, whether or not people believe in Christianity or not, but you had 12 people that turned the world upside down because they were willing to lose everything because they knew they had nothing to lose. The American Revolution was done by a small percentage of people. We could do it if we stop being scared of our own shadow, or as a friend of mine likes to say, he calls it wet bladder syndrome, where we'd rather wet our pants rather than say a truly libertarian thing. And that is not the path forward. That is not how third-party politics work. You can't play safe. You can't be the harmless little third party that people pat in the head and tell you how cute you are.
Okay, well, I obviously couldn't agree more, especially on this, because there's a vast number of people out there who are politically homeless right now. Because this is an opportunity really to distinguish yourself from the two parties.
Yes.
I mean, to go around saying, well, we believed in gay marriage before the Democrats did. Well, a lot of people will say, oh, that's really nice. I'm glad you did. That's an interesting historical curiosity. Now let me go vote for the Democrats because they have a much better chance than you do. If you really want to distinguish yourself, it's not to say, look at how similar we are to things you're familiar with already, but we're the people who are going to be the voice of the voiceless. And they really are voiceless. People whose livelihoods have been ruined, who have had major health problems because they couldn't get to the doctor because of this and that restriction, they have no one to speak for them. And if they try to speak for themselves, well, we all know what happens to them. They're declared horrible people. They're written out of society. it would have been great to distinguish ourselves from the Republicans on this. There are a handful of Republicans who've been sort of okay on it. But for the most part, the Republicans have been pathetically Me Too about it, partly because Trump went all in for it, at least at the beginning. And so they didn't know what they're supposed to. So they just got in line on it, by and large. What a missed opportunity for the libertarians to say at this moment in history, we're different from these people. Now, on social media, there was at least one social media post where it was almost like they were annoyed to have to say it. Yes, people should be able to choose whether or not to do X. But during a pandemic, it's a really good idea to do X. All right, so great. So we got half Dr. Fauci and half very reluctant kind of civil libertarian.
Yeah, it's now some of the state parties are kicking butt. I mean, really, like our in Colorado, our state chair led the Reopen Colorado movement.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of state, but the national party is falling down. But the state parties, I want to give it up to a lot of them. They're doing great. But, you know, my concern is the national party. And a lot of these states don't feel like we have their back because we're silent. And to me, it's a symptom of a larger problem where, again, using my biblical analogies, we've lost our first love. You know, the book of Revelation says, if you're lukewarm, you're only good to be spit out of the mouth. And I fear that's where we've become. And this is going to be a weird analogy, but I've been watching really closely this new third party that's starting called the People's Party, socialist as all get out. But I am listening to their calls and I'm just getting inspired by their passion for the wrong ideas. If only we could have that passion for the good ideas. But unfortunately, I think is what happens with institutions. I say this as a joke sometime, but it's half joke, half real, that I think sometimes the National Committee is where radicals go to die. And people were on fire, they go there, they become institutionalized, which I am determined will never happen to me. And, you know, I'm the person who don't care if everyone disagrees. If I think this is the principal position, I'm standing on it. You can never love the honor of the position or your title so much that you are not willing to give it all up for principle.
I'll give you an example. I agree with what you just said. I yield to no one in my opposition to something like, let's say, civil asset forfeiture or stuff like that. But it would be extremely tone deaf in April or May of 2020 to be tweeting about that. I mean, yeah, it's right. I'm not in disagreement with it. And if you're tweeting 100 times a day, maybe one of them could be about that. But it's just like the whole messaging has been almost as if this stuff isn't happening. It's been very strange. Now, let's talk about, you know, because you have one foot at least inside the various caucuses in that you were, you know, listening in on the conversations and what's concerning people. And you know, I could see making a pragmatist case for precisely why we need to emphasize lockdowns and the problems with all the restrictions placed on us, because that would distinguish us. It would mobilize people we've never been able to reach before. The trouble is, my experience is that at least a chunk, not all, but a chunk of the pragmatists are, if I may use the term, so blue-pilled, so prepared to accept the standard narrative on everything. So if Dr. Fauci says so-and-so, okay, as long as it's voluntary, we'll go along with Dr. Fauci. I tend to think they don't want that. I know where the Mises caucus stands. What's the impression you get from the others on the lockdown issue?
You know, first starting with the pragmatists, a part of the problem is I think sometimes we're, you nailed it earlier, but I think a lot of people don't really get this, that pragmatism is not an ideology, it's a methodology. So within the pragmatist caucus, you have moderates, you have very moderate libertarians, and you have radical libertarians, and they'll have two completely different views about pragmatism, i.e. what works. You know, so it's so hard to compare a methodological caucus with an ideological caucus, such as the radical caucus or the Mises caucus. The radicals, in my view, they've done some good social media messaging, but I don't think they've been particularly proactive on the issue either. I can't say that I am particularly thrilled with what they're doing either. And, you know, that's my baby. I helped, you know, really start to formalize that caucus. So it pains me to have to say that. The ones on the forefront right now, I think, are the Mises people. And that's where I've been spending a lot of time because I want to get stuff done. I don't want to just have a social group, you know, I can find that anywhere. That's not what politics are for, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, folks, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Lucy Nicotine. Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. Lucy's created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine in cherry ice flavor, and each and every flavor actually tastes great. And it's convenient and discreet. You can enjoy them anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, even in the gym. I have several people in my life who I know would like to switch to a cleaner alternative to cigarettes. And now that Lucy Nicotine is a sponsor, well, I can tell them I have just the thing for them. So look, everybody, it's 2021. Make a clean break. Get rid of your cigarettes. Unplug your vape. Throw out your dip. Get some Lucy Nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal. Subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. So simple. And you don't have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. And Tom Woods listeners, go to lucy.co. That's lucy.co. And use promo code Woods to get 20% off all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use promo code Woods at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co and be sure to use that promo code Woods. So what do you want to see happen? I mean, next year there's yet another convention. What would you like to see happen?
Oof. You know, I would like to
I know it's, by the way, I realize that could be an awkward question because you are a sitting member of the LNC and you don't have to answer anything that you're uncomfortable with.
Oh, no. And I wouldn't want to even say, what do I want to see next year? I would like everyone now to take some self-reflection and find their backbone. We can't wait till next year. We need to start now. And if not, what I would like to see next year is that the people that are leading at the national level not only be good managers, because I think everyone on the LNC right now is an excellent manager. We have that covered, but also great messengers. Each of us have a bully pulpit, but we also need to come together collectively to be the shining voice for liberty. Listen, you know, and I know that the LP amongst a lot of small L libertarians that are out there, and I'm not talking about the Republican libertarians, I'm talking about actual libertarians, we're considered a joke. And we need to do some self-reflection about why that is. We should be the hub for these people. And I'm not even talking about the libertarians who think politics itself is a joke, because we're not going to reach them. They've already decided what we're doing is treachery. But the ones who are willing to be involved politically still are not in the LP. Why? We really need to examine why that is and get those people in. We're too small to be so fractured. And honestly, I think part of it is because we keep giving ourselves whiplash. When I first joined the party, I thought we pandered way too much to the right, honestly. And now we're pandering way too much to the left. And this game of whiplash that we play, going back and forth between which side we're going to pander to, that is not pragmatism and it's not effective. Why can't we just realize we're completely orthogonal to the right and left and just be libertarian? Could we try that? You know, stop pandering to either and being so concerned. You know, some of the really progressive, I wouldn't even call it left ideas. It's that ultra progressivism that we're starting to, you know, pay a lot of lip service to, I do not think is serving us. Just like, you know, I'm the least socially conservative person you'll ever find in a while. And just like, I don't think pandering to that serves us well. We need to get our libertarian identity on straight and be loud, proud libertarians. I am convinced there is a ton of people out there, I was one of them, who are just waiting to hear our message. They don't even know they believe it. And I don't mean that kind of in the wishy-washy, everyone's a libertarian and just doesn't realize it. I find that expression completely patronizing, and I don't think it's true. But I do think there is a bunch of people out there for which it is true. And it's not everyone, but there is a lot of people that are just dying to hear actual libertarian things. And right now, we pander and don't win. Why would people join us to pander and not win when you got two old parties that are much better at pandering than we are and they win? So a friend of mine wrote an article going, why hold back if you're not going to win? And if we never, if we for these 50 years hadn't held back, we would be winning now. That is the paradox, I think, that we've been of two minds for too long and not really boldly stating exactly what it is we believe. I think, A, I think sometimes we behave, I call it libertarian Gnosticism, where we think we have to be the gatekeeper for our neighbors because they couldn't handle the truth, you know, put in the officer and a gentleman is a quote in here. Like, we have to tone it down because it will scare our neighbors. Now, it doesn't scare us. We're better than that. You know, we can handle it, but our neighbor can't. And I call bull. Our neighbor can handle it just like we can. We don't need to protect the sensitive feels of our neighbors. We need to say exactly what it is that we want. Because what you win people with is what you win them to. You know, and if they come in thinking one thing and then they find out, oh, no, they come in thinking, oh, you just want to legalize marijuana. And then they find out later, no, it's actually all drugs. They're going to rightly feel lied to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why we play hide the ball. That's not serving anyone. And that's what the change I would like to see for us to be just bold libertarians. It doesn't mean we have to be asses. It doesn't mean we have to be obnoxious. We can be still empathetic. Because I think, as Dr. Mary Ruwert thinks, that libertarianism is actually the most empathetic and life-affirming and human-flourishing philosophy out there. I am not a libertarian brutalist whatsoever, but I think we can message bold and with empathy.
She is the master at that. I absolutely love the way she does that. There is no flinching, no compromise in her Healing Our World book, but what a great intro book that is for certain friends of yours. Anyway, I love her, and I've really appreciated having her on a bunch of times. Let me ask you a challenging question that I've asked a few other people at the LP. I just want to know how you approach something like this. I live in Florida now, and as you know, although there are masks, you know, most of the time, the key thing is there are no state-imposed occupancy restrictions. You can have a wedding with as many people at it as you want. I went to see Rob Schneider do comedy at the King Center nearby. I've gone to several plays at the Garden Theater. I mean, life is not quite normal, but it's as close as you're going to get while people are still scared. Now, here's my concern. Now, Ron DeSantis is not perfect. Believe me. I mean, he's, you know, next to me, Ron DeSantis is like, you know, Bill Clinton or something, you know, or Joe Biden compared to me. But he's at least kept my kids' lives from being ruined. And that's no small thing in this day and age. Now, if there had been a major libertarian challenge in that gubernatorial election, we would have gotten, it's a very decent chance, we would have gotten Andrew Gillum, which means Florida would have been California. My kids would have been miserable with their mental health threatened. So, playing devil's advocate here, can you understand why some people would think that the LP could actually inadvertently do more harm than good in a specific case like that?
No. And I know that's probably somewhat counterintuitive. I don't think you can centrally plan liberty. History is not all of one piece. Like, one thing, there's the butterfly effect. You know, one thing affects another. And I can only think of good that ends up coming from more libertarian success. There is always an excuse not to vote for the libertarian. There is always an excuse not to take that step. We have to take it sometime. And the longer we wait, the worse the future for our kids is going to be. And there might be some kind of short-term shortfall, but I just would not be involved in this party if I did not think that we need to take those steps now. We just have to take it now. Each time you compromise, it's brought our doom closer. Not to be melodramatic, but I really fear for our country and our countrymen, that the road we're going down now is so accelerated that we're the best political hope there is right now. And people need to just bite the bullet and take that step. Because if enough people did it, we would win. That's the crazy thing. We could turn this around, but you got to stiffen your spine and do it. I mean, that's my opinion on it. I don't think voting with the Republicans, who consistently bend us over the table on ballot access, it's really the classic case of sleeping with the enemy. You're just propagating a machine that is chewing up our future. And I would say for the same for the Democrat Party as well. It's just your specific example. So no, I'm sympathetic, but I don't understand, if that makes any sense.
Okay, fair enough. So one more question before I let you go. The Libertarian Party is like the United States in that it is a kind of a federal system.
It is.
It's a much better federal system than the U.S. because it's not coercive at all. So if you don't like the messaging or, let's say, lack thereof coming from national, there's nothing stopping you from, in your local or state party, from having more bold messaging or doing things like what you mentioned in Colorado, reopen California, right, and the LP being a major part of that. What would you like to see? You know, obviously you'd like to see better, more vigorous national leadership. But in the meantime, what would you like to see the state parties doing?
Oh my goodness. This isn't necessarily state party, but I'm going to get to that. But you kind of just like set this up and we didn't even discuss this. You know, when I brought this to the national party, they basically had said to me, if you want to do something, just go do something. And that's like something you never say to me because I'll do it. They basically said, go roll your own. And I'm like, okay. So, a group of activists and myself got together. And you might remember in 2016, antiwar.com did a campaign called Artie Against the Next War. It was a social media campaign where they had these printable flyers that, you know, it really went viral, where people had printed them and took the pictures and had the hashtag, and it really brought a lot of awareness. Well, this group of activists and I, we purchased the domain and we're building it out right now. And now, because I know I'm mentioning on the show, everyone's going to go into high gear, called artieagainstthenextmandate.com. And we are starting a very similar social media campaign. And any state party could take this on board. And we're going to have graphics that'll be downloadable that you could print signs for your protests, little flyers. We're going to have like a protest in a box program at that website. And that's what I decided to do, rather than just complain, decided to do something. So we're going to be pushing this out over the coming weeks. We're also going to try to provide for state parties resources of programs that they could take on like that, or even like their website should have splash pages. So when visitors come, the first thing they see is our position against these mandates that's affecting people's lives. And so we'll have designers who will design that state parties could just take and use. You know, we want to be a central hub and part of the solution, because complaining about the national party is not going to help liberty, really, if they're not going to change their mind. So yeah, I'm basically rolling my own with that website. And that's pretty much launching this week. So that was a perfect setup. So yes, state parties can do that. Individual activists can do that. One thing any libertarian should know is you don't need permission. You don't need the permission slip. So if they're not doing it, you can do it. You know, just go out and do it. You don't need anyone's permission. It would be great. I hope the National Party looks at what we're doing and takes it on board. But if they don't, okay, we'll go do our own.
I love it. That is exactly the right attitude. And that's, frankly, that's just our personality type. We are we're just going to go do what we want to do sort of people. So I guess lp.org is the website for the Libertarian Party. Is there any other site you'd like to give out?
Well, certainly it will be the artieagainstthenextmandate.com. Again, it's getting built out this week, so don't judge it too harshly yet, but we are starting that. And I would also appreciate it if people like the sort of ideas I say, and if they like Libertarian Party history and the Libertarian Party insider stuff. I do also have a YouTube channel. It's called Pink Flame of Liberty. And I would love people to come check it out. And I would really appreciate the support. And, you know, if you want the LP to change, if you like what I had to say, don't eschew the party. That's not the way you change the party. You change it by joining. So please, lp.org/membership. If you don't like what the National Party is doing, let me give you a tip. They don't like that I say this, but I say it anyway. If there's a project you believe in, you can tell them to use your membership dues only towards that project. You can earmark it to ballot access. You could earmark it to the Historical Preservation Committee, which is my pet project. You can earmark it to the database, the CRM. do that as a protest rather than not joining. Because if you don't join, things are not going to go the way you want. That's not the way to do it. So I beg everyone, please renew your membership or join.
Fair enough. That is a sensible message. Well, Karen Ann Harlos, thank you for your time and for your tireless work. I, for one, appreciate it. And I know an awful lot of people out there do as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. And I hope you have an awesome day.
All right, everybody. Remember, save the date. October 16th, 2021 is the 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show. We're having a live event in Orlando. I'll have details for you coming very soon. We're just about to book the property, and boy, is it a beauty. We had a huge crowd for the 1000th episode. This is going to dwarf that, so you're definitely going to want to be there. So save the date, October 16th. I'll look forward to seeing you there, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.